Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. The following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great-tasting, high-quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today.
Boys, I'm mellow as a honeydew. Yay! That cat is high. Look that look in his eye. Oh man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. In the studio today, I have a good friend of mine, Selena Ricksgood. This is the creator of the Dizzy Fizz, which is an amazing blog, and an up-to-date account of cocktail happenings and trends in New York City and all over the world. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Damon.
I'm glad we finally got you in here, and in pretty good timing.
Yeah, just in time. But it's a great way to start the new year as well.
Absolutely. So you've been doing the Dizzy Fizz since 2009, right?
Yes, World Cocktail Day, May of 2009. I was unemployed. I'd been sort of working on some articles for a few months before I wanted the blog to go live. And there was this big celebration at Prana with all these top bartenders, not just from New York, but from all over. And I covered it, and it was a really exciting launch for me.
Awesome. So you had been the background in the cut, checking out all these bars, and you've been a cocktail enthusiast for quite a while.
Right. Well, I was a nightlife editor for this website covering sort of restaurant bar reviews, but I also had a lot of friends in the industry. And, this was 2009, even the end of 2008, things were really shifting in New York, and people were getting excited about making drinks. And I was getting excited switching from dirty martinis to some really great classic cocktails. So it was just an exciting time to be out and about, and also having, being forced to stay on top of all the new bar openings. I felt like I had an insider's view.
Yeah. So What was the moment? Do you remember the moment, the drink, the bar?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Right?
Definitely when Clover Club opened, I was really blown away. I guess before that, I think it was really just more about making drinks at home. Buying ingredients, stocking up the bar, getting just excited to see what we could make with Falernum or, St. Elizabeth's. I guess you kind of stumped me there. I'm not sure what the moment was.
It was just a blur. You just got swept up in it.
Definitely.
I feel like that happens to a lot of people.
Got swept up. And it was just a lot of fun. Oh, you know what it was, too? It was also like the Randolph.
Yeah.
Places like that where there was so much community.
That's definitely a bartender, clubhouse. So explain to us a little bit about the Dizzy Fizz. What are some of your focuses as far as the website goes?
So when I put the website together, I really wanted to take some of the seriousness out of cocktail culture, really make it approachable for the typical sort of person that goes out, wants to spend money on a couple drinks, take the intimidating factors out of cocktails. So I put together a guide to some of what I thought were the best New York City bars serving cocktails with a map, something that for whatever reason I couldn't find online. Mm-hmm. I put a glossary on the blog, and then I just started doing these articles, what to do this week in New York, who's guest bartending, what are the new bars opening up, staying on top of the trends and looking at ingredients, breaking them down. And then I started interviewing the bartenders as well. And again, it was a really sort of light, casual format, just asking them these 12 funny questions, getting to know them, and covering events. And next thing I knew, I was going out like 4 times a week, it maybe sometimes four events in one night. So it was a really fun time getting started in that.
Cool. And I remember, I know we had corresponded like through emails, but meeting you in person, not in New York City, but at South by Southwest at a house party.
Yep.
That you had put together, right? With some of the USBG bartenders down in Texas. And I just remember a lot of Frenette and Mindy Kuchin was there. And
that was a lot of fun.
That was a great time.
Austin is a great place.
And speaking of the cocktail scene, they're blowing up.
Yeah. Really fun city. And it was, yeah, the internet is funny. That's how we met. I knew of you and then met you in person in Austin. But and I think that's what's great about the cocktail world is you just have this common interest, and then next thing you know, you're sitting at this person's bar in Austin that you have been corresponding with, mm-hmm. and asking questions or sharing stories, and you feel like you know them already, just because you share this sort of love affair with a cocktail.
Yeah, and especially those kinds of events that, you know, you were talking about earlier, you know, like basically event hopping, you know, four in one night. There's so many of them nowadays, but you have actually coordinated a couple of different ones. One that I was actually lucky enough to go to this past holiday season was the Holiday Spirits Bazaar that you held at the Astor Center. And it was really cool because in the very holiday kind of spirit, no pun intended, everyone was making punch, you know?
Yeah.
And didn't you did a couple of years ago at the Summit Bar, one of your first events was...
It was my first event. I love entertaining in general. So when the blog was sort of taking off, I thought, you know, it would be great to sort of bring my audience together and see everyone kind of in New York come together just for a fun night. And Summit Bar was still a new bar, and they were looking to do an industry party. And they said, you know, you could totally do this here. And they had this really long bar, and I just visualized bowls of punch along this bar, and it came together with about, I think I had 10 different brands. It was totally free for, you know, invite only, you know, all the bartenders, sort of a thank you. And we had about 150 people, and I was really impressed with how it went off. So that was my first event, and then the one just this past November was my third annual holiday party, but my fifth big event like that, and definitely my most successful. I think we had about 350 people come.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun. I was there and I had a great time.
Punch is definitely always a part of a Dizzy Fizz event because
it's like a communal, like it's a celebratory communal thing, you know.
It's like celebratory, and also like I love just showing up at a party and getting a drink right away.
Oh sure, who doesn't?
So that's what Punch is good for.
Tell us a little bit about the other event that you put on, the French Spirit Soiree.
Right. So last April, I wanted to do a springtime event, not necessarily during Manhattan Cocktail Classic. So I wanted to hold it a little earlier. And I was thinking absinthe at first, but then I thought that might be too overwhelming. So there's just so many great French spirits. We had Lillet, we had Benedictine, Cointreau, we had Armagnac, Cognac, we had vermouth. I mean, it just went on. And we had a...
Sounds like a party, man.
A really great band and some burlesque dancers. So this year, I want to throw that party again. But hopefully on Bastille Day.
Perfect. That makes way too much sense.
Yeah. So, and that will give me some time to sort of plan for that this summer.
And you get chartreuse in there too.
Hopefully. They were hard to get for the last one. But we had some really great brands come together. Saint Germain. I was just really impressed with how well that turned out as well. So far, every event has been really successful.
Excellent. So at these events, obviously, you've got, like you said, entertainment, like the bands and stuff. That's something that we were talking about before the show, you know, as far as like cocktail trends go. It's always hard to predict what's happening next, but you were saying you want to see more like entertainment in cocktail joints, or like it would be interesting to see that. And I think I can totally agree with that, because really what you're doing with these places is you're building a whole experience, you know. And I know that Clover Club, speaking of them again, they always have the Dreamland Orchestra play, and yeah. That's it always makes for a great environment, you know.
I think it does make sense. I think you know, people want to dress up a little bit on a weekend night in New York, and
like a non-holiday weekend night, right?
Yeah, you just kind like, of want yeah. like a nice, elegant evening, you know. And then, yeah, there's the other side of it. There's bartenders running their own dive bars, but I think there's definitely an audience in New York that wants that sort of vintage. They want to wear their vintage outfits and listen to jazz and maybe see some burlesque and have a really nice cocktail at the same time. And I've been hearing also that there might be a Milk and Honey moving to Midtown. I'm not sure. But, you know, I could see like Midtown also becoming sort of a place for that. And I think the Rum House is doing.
Oh, yeah. The Rum House. Yeah, because, God, I forget the piano player's name, but I think his. I think his nickname is Leadfoot. What is he? He's always just stomping the ground really hard while he's playing. There's like ragtime stuff. Yeah, we went there one night and that was happening. It was just kind of like totally transport you to another like time and another environment, you know? Especially in New York City, it's like you try, there's so much escapism that you try to perform it. And it doesn't always happen, but it's really nice to be in an environment like that and get away for a sec, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, people always ask what can we do in New York when we're visiting? And so I think there's definitely room for that trend to grow. And it's more communal than the sort of just going into a speakeasy, you know, and feeling like you've right. discovered something, to discover something and, you know, be entertained at the same time. So I think it's an exciting time in New York. I hope more places do add performance.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we have to go like with a couple of kazoos and just start annoying everybody, we'll do it.
Yeah, no, we will.
Cool. So let's take a quick break. And then when we get back, we'll be talking more about cocktails and the state of cocktail dome. That's even a word I could use, with Selena Rixgood. Back in a moment.
Oh yeah. All right. Somebody's hiding, it's drowning my icebox. Somebody's cold one, it's giving me chills.
You're listening to the Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte. In the studio today, I have the lovely Selena Rixgood, who is, at the moment, 39 and a half weeks pregnant.
Yep.
Due on Sunday. Congratulations.
Thank you. That's very exciting.
We were talking during the break about mocktails.
Yes. I've had a few.
You've had quite a few over the past,
9 months.
9 months. It can be, depending on where you are and like who the bartender is, sometimes a point of contention for bartenders to make mocktails because...
I think it catches them off guard.
It catches them off guard, totally.
A mocktail is always going to be cheaper than a regular cocktail, too. So it's not like their focus is, I'm going to make a raspberry, mint lemonade. And we're going to sell so many of these tonight, So I think it's, when I come into the bar and they see me, it does catch them off guard. But I kind of like to put them on the spot that way as well.
Well, I think, especially nowadays with so many great bartenders out there and so much more information and so much more creativity, I think it's one of the best challenges for bartenders since they're typically using the spirit as one of the flavors in the cocktail or spirits as the flavors in the cocktail. I think it's definitely a way to flex your creative muscles in a cocktail and make something interesting and delicious. And, not too sweet.
Yes, not too sweet. I could give out a public service announcement for everyone. I've just had a lot of sugary versions of cocktails where there's just extra fruit or sugar compensating. But then I've had some really amazing, refreshing cocktails as well. Mocktails as well. So I see it as, a really good, way to sort of... challenge a bartender to do something more of a culinary level.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've had some really good ones and I've had some really bad ones. But it's great to see some places with an actual menu, like I was saying, a Gramercy Tavern. Mm-hmm. But then you can just go into, you shouldn't feel limited that you can't go to a bar. It's a little awkward for everyone else, but who cares?
No, but I think it's great. I think it's, we were talking about it on the break as well. There are certain ingredients that you can use in mocktails that are totally, like you were saying, ginger beer.
Ginger beer
is great,
It's delicious.
Take ginger beer and mix it with some other stuff and you've got a great mocktail.
And then I've got something spicy. Cold to drink and I feel like I'm not sticking out with my lemonade.
Right, totally. And also, one of my favorite things to use for mocktails is San Pellegrino makes the sand bitter, which is basically a non-alcoholic, Americano cocktail.
Yeah, I think actually Gramercy does this sort of non-alcoholic Negroni is really good.
Yeah, I when I was using it at home a couple of years ago, I would just mix it with gin and call it a no-groni or a non-groni.
Non-groni.
I think especially with so many, when you go to these cocktail bars, they've got so many different, fresh fruits and herbs and spices. And, they're all right there on the bar, and people like to display them, the whole mise en place, you've got a whole spectrum of flavors that you can play with. So might as well use them,
Yeah. So long as they're well balanced, you can have a really delicious non-alcoholic cocktail. Absolutely.
Yeah. Another thing we were talking about on that subject was, and especially for you reporting on the New York City cocktail bartending scene, is that obviously New York City is basically the capital of the cocktail world, and everything pretty much starts here and then spreads to the rest of the world as far as cocktail trends and different flavors and ideas. And one of those things is that we have access to so many different spirits. First of all, more spirits than most people can get their hands on.
We're pretty spoiled.
And we always get them first.
Right.
But not only that, the different types of ingredients that the bartenders are making on their own, the different tinctures and bitters and syrups, and even, I know people are making their own Amaro, that kind of stuff. It's when it gets pressed, when it goes out to the press, when it's in the news, and someone even upstate or, you know, someone in Minnesota reads about it, like, how are they able to, like, I know that it's become an issue where people are trying to recreate these cocktails, and
I think people do get overwhelmed when they read some of these drink recipes, and then they get turned off, or they think it's a big joke, or you know, we're just going overboard. Why can't we just have a frozen margarita and call it a day? Yeah. You know, but for the people who do want to try to make these drinks at home, I think the important thing to keep in mind is if you can't find the specific ingredient, find out what the flavor profile is and see if you can recreate it in another way. There was an article in the New York Times last month where this writer, he was living upstate. He tried to make three different drinks from the PDT cocktail book, staying within his own community, going to different liquor stores. And he spent like almost $500 on these bottles. And, you know, full price, you know, some of these spirits are very expensive and not everyone can just go to New York City and get these cocktails. So these were some advanced drinks he was trying to make. And I thought his point was a little discouraging, saying, you know, you have to live in New York to have access to these ingredients. And then he didn't even use fresh juice when he was making the drinks. He used grocery store juice. So I think there's definitely room to learn the fundamentals of making cocktails. And you can do a lot with just fresh juice and a couple of simple ingredients, and start from there. Get your favorite sort of basic classics down before you're trying to make, you know, some Jim Meehan concoction, yeah, with a special tincture.
Or like Don Lee with like popcorn infused, you know, rum. Or
right. These are novelty drinks, you know. And
they're great. They're delicious. But they're obviously advanced.
Advanced, right. So
that book is a wonderful book, and it's a beautiful book, and it's chock full of really amazing information. But it is definitely for the advanced bartender. It's not, you know, it's not to be exclusive. It's sharing ideas, you know.
Right.
I think that's really cool. Sharing
and inspiring people, you know, exactly, to try their own twists on that drink or this drink. But I just hope people at home don't get overwhelmed and turned off by the whole cocktail craziness, because it sometimes gets a little blown out of proportion. But there's, you know, tons of information online to help just sort of the beginner home bartender get started. So I hope they'll go to my blog and they'll read some of the recipes or other blogs. There's definitely hundreds of cocktail blogs out there. And you can interact with bloggers. You know, that's one great thing, is most of us will just answer your comments and questions right away. So
yeah. I like what you said about learning the classics first, because nowadays one of the things that really gets to me is when you go to, especially with so many cocktail bars popping up, there are almost too many of them and not enough experienced bartenders in classics. And, you know, when Phil Ward was on the show, he was talking about it for a little while. You know, we talked about it definitely in depth. But, you know, if I come into your bar and, like, I look at your menu, I'm like, oh, that's really cool and creative. I'll have a Brandy Alexander, and if you can't make it, you know, I'm like, why? Because pretty much anyone can write a cocktail menu, you know? Anyone can put drinks together. They might not always be, you know, all the way thought out, or maybe not that great, but for the most part, it's like, you can, if you've been bartending for like a couple of years, you can put a menu together. But just understanding the classics is a very important part of bartending. And, you know, especially like you were saying with fresh juices and stuff like that. If you're living in like Kansas, like if you're in Lawrence, Kansas, and
I've been hearing good things about Kansas City lately.
Oh yeah. And St. Louis too. But you know, if you're making a sidecar, you know, even if you're using cheap triple sec and cheap brandy, I mean, at least do yourself the favor of like using freshly squeezed lemon juice and not like the stuff out of the squeeze bottle from the grocery store.
Right. Yeah. I think there's just some fundamentals that every professional bartender should definitely know, but then, you know, the home bartender should just start from there as well. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I just hope that people don't look at, you know, the New York trends and go, oh, I need to start doing my sherry vinegars and, you know, just get overwhelmed and really give the whole experience a chance.
Yeah. What do you think some of the what are some of your predictions as far as the this year's like holiday or cocktail trends
for 2012?
For 2012.
So yeah, the last 2 years I did put a list together. This year, drinking a lot of mocktails, I have to say, I feel a little out of the loop. But I just, you know, I definitely think the industry is still growing. You know, there's new micro distilleries opening. It's still a really exciting time in New York. And I think the bartenders are going to be the ones to come up with the trends moving forward. But having said that, you know, I think we will see a lot of the seriousness still coming out of the speakeasy movement. I think people are looking for a more casual cocktail scene, and that's why there's a lot of bartenders, you know, looking to open their own bars, creating excellent drinks in a much more casual atmosphere.
Absolutely.
So that's something I'm excited to see. Other than that, I'll be really looking to the bartenders to tell me what's new and exciting, whether it's carbonation or,
carbonation's definitely a topic that's been thrown around over the last couple of months.
And I was thinking last year I'd see more cocktails on tap, and I hadn't really seen that yet. So I don't know if that's something that will materialize. Just making drinks faster and easier, but still just excellent cocktails.
Just totally executing the classics to the highest level. I love that, you know. If you make me just a classic daiquiri, I'm the happiest dude in the bar.
Yeah. Hopefully education will continue to be a trend, you know.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And more people in the bartending community, you know, I think they do see themselves as mentors to the next generation. So
yeah. Well, Selena, I've had a great time talking with you. I'm so glad that you got to come on the show. I mean, and I thank you for coming on, like, literally with days until...
This is probably one of your more sober shows, but...
No, I love it.
It's been a lot of fun.
I love it. Because we don't get to talk about mocktails, and I think it's definitely one of... it's definitely something that gets overlooked at bars a lot, and it's something that, like you said, you know, is a challenge for bartenders, and they should take more time to consider.
I agree.
You know, everyone always, you know, like any bartender, anytime you do like a bartender's choice, they always... You know, if it's gin, if it's shaken or stirred, you've got one each, you know?
Right.
And if someone asks for a mocktail, you should have, you know, four
have a
or five
few in your pocket. Yeah. Definitely.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations again. And thank you again for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And I can't wait to see your kid. And and I also can't wait to continue to read The Dizzy Fizz. And look in his eyes. We'll have a great time on Bastille Day.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Thanks again, Selena.
Thanks, Damon. Cheers.
All right. This has been The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte. Cheers.
Look at that look in his eye, babe. Man, I wouldn't lie. You get higher than a kite.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
Man, I wouldn't lie. The jet's high.